Let's see, it's Wednesday, so this is Judges, right? All right. Revelation comes Sunday. Got to keep them straight. Welcome to everybody, and welcome to everybody online. If you're watching with us, we're glad to have you. We're studying Judges. This is our second episode, second class session, and we have a worksheet to work on tonight. At the top, you'll see we've got the first chapter in view, and we're not going to read the entire thing, but let's read together the first five verses. Who would like to read the first five verses? Anybody want to read, do some reading? All right, Doc's got it. 1 through 5, chapter 1 of Judges.
Now after the death of Joshua, it came to pass that the children of Israel asked the Lord, saying, who shall be the first to go up for us against the Canaanites to fight against them? And the Lord said, Judah shall go up. Indeed, I have delivered the land into his hand. So Judah said to Simeon, his brother, come up with me to my allotted territory, that we may fight against the Canaanites, and I will likewise go with you to your allotted territory. And Simeon went with him. Then Judah went up, and the Lord delivered the Canaanites and the Perizzites into their hand. And they killed 10,000 men at Bezek. And they found Adonai Bezek in Bezek and fought against him, and they defeated the Canaanites and the Perizzites.
All right, now this should have been what we read throughout the entire history, that they went against their enemies and they defeated them because God had promised them, I will drive your enemies out before you. But somehow, some way, shape, or form, Israel lost faith. They didn't do what was right. That's what we looked at last week in the beginning of chapter 2. And so they began to struggle. Now, when you look at the first part of the worksheet, it says initially all went well, as 1 verse 4 tells us. The blank gave the Canaanites and Perizzites into the hands. What's in the first blank? The Lord. The Lord gave the Canaanites and Perizzites into the hands of the tribe of Judah. This was the tribe of Judah. Now, from the very outset here, what did the tribe of Judah do right? Or the people of Israel, what did they do right? I think everybody's got a worksheet, right? Anybody need one? Okay. What did they do? Take a look at the first verse, the very first verse. They inquired of the Lord. That means they asked God, what should we do? Who should go up first? How are we going to do this, Lord? That's the smartest thing you could ever do. It doesn't matter what the decision you're trying to make. Ask God about it, and he will help you. And so they inquired of the Lord. He said, Judah, you go up. Judah went up. They were successful. But that did not continue. Verses 8, 10, 13, 17. I wanted to note all of these because these are the verses in this first chapter that talks about the success. And by the way, in 118, what territory did they conquer and gain? Gaza. You see, this is outdated. This is 3,000 years old. So it's out of date. Doesn't have anything to do with what's going on today, right? So God told Abraham, I'm going to bring your kids into this country. It's going to be hundreds of years from now, but I'm going to bring them in and I'm going to give them that land. And that's exactly what God did. And here are Israel coming in and taking possession of Gaza. That's their land. All right, number 2. In verse 19, however, we began reading that attempts to drive out the Canaanites began to, and we haven't read 19 together, but you can look at 19. They began to fail. Now the Lord was with Judah. This is what it says in verse 19. The Lord was with Judah, and they took possession of the hill country. But they could not drive out the inhabitants of the valley because, well, why not? Now you're saying they were scared. It see, in my mind, it's the same thing, but what does the text say? The text says they had iron chariots. Now, I'm thinking, warfare's getting crazy. Reading about drones, You're just a soldier in a trench somewhere, and this little model airplane flies into you with a bomb. Boom. It's getting crazy. Another model airplane is up there. That's what I'm calling them, model airplanes, for lack of a better way to describe them, because that's about what they are. Little radio-controlled airplanes up there with cameras. Some of those cameras are in real-time vision. Some of them have infrared, so they can even see the heat coming off your body. It's warfare is a dangerous thing these days. How did they do warfare in this day and age? In Judges, time of the Judges, Joshua. Yeah, it was up-close combat. If you had a bow, you could shoot a bow. But I'm here to tell you, I've been shooting a bow for a long time, and you're awfully close if you want to hit something with a bow. You can sling stones, and slinging stones was a good way to fight back in the day. That's what David did, but most combat was close quarters. And everybody who shot a bow and everybody who slung a stone also had a sword strapped on their hip because they knew that it was going to be close quarters combat pretty soon. So I'm thinking, just the human part of me, those guys got iron chariots. What are we going to do against iron chariots? By the way, what did Israel not have? They didn't have iron. They didn't have steel. That'll come up later in 2 Samuel that other people were making the iron and those kind of implements, but Israel didn't have that. What did they have? Well, they had God. They had the Lord. Should that have been enough in their minds to say, we've got the Lord? But they're not faithful like us. They don't. They have doubts. They're not like us, completely confident all the time. Anyway, something happened. So, finishing up number two there, and this blank would be hard for you to fill in, but I'll give you a shot at it anyway. This is my thinking. I'm wanting to make a contrast here. The reason for this blank failure seems to be outlined in 2, 1 through 5 as actually being a blank failure. In the first blank, I would put military. It was a military failure. They went to battle and they couldn't win. That's a military failure. It seems to be outlined in 2, 1 through 5 as actually being a blank failure. Now, we read 2, 1 through 5 last week. What happened to Joshua? He died. What happened to all the generation that was with Joshua? They died. What happened? A generation rose up, didn't know the Lord. And but even before that happened, though, there began to be a relaxing of their spiritual fiber. That's what chapter 2 is all about. Remember the angel came? Angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal. Who remembers what Gilgal means? The name of Gilgal means a rolling away of sin. That's what they named that place when they came up out of the promised land, or out of the bondage to the promised land. They consecrated themselves to God, and that place where they consecrated themselves was called Gilgal. The sins were rolled away. Now what's this place called that they're at now, according to chapter 2? It's called Bochim. What does that mean? Weepers. Weeping. This is a sadness. Now we're weeping because we are not doing what we're supposed to do, and that's what the angel of the Lord is telling them. The angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Bochim, came up from a rolling to a weeping, and he said, I have brought you out of Egypt and led you to the land that I have sworn to your fathers. And I said, I'll never break my covenant with you. As for you, you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land. You shall tear down their altars, but you have not obeyed me. What is this you have done? Therefore, I also said, I will not drive them out before you. They will become as thorns in your sides, and their gods will be a snare to you. In other words, I think we're getting a picture here of what's happening and why they're not driving these guys out, even though they've got iron chariots. God doesn't care about iron chariots. They could have had nuclear warheads and B-1 bombers, and it wouldn't have mattered. God would have taken care of them. But there was a failure, I believe, on the part of the Israelites, because it was not God breaking down in this situation, but it was them. So I've got noted, if you want to read and outline, make some notes in your own text, you can look at these verses here that note the failures to conquer. Just read a couple of those here in chapter 1. Verse 21, chapter 1, verse 21, the sons of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites who lived in Jerusalem. Who will later take care of the Jebusites? Anybody remember? David. David will take care of the Jebusites, and Jerusalem will become his city, city of David. 27, Manasseh. Well, wait a minute. Who's Manasseh? Come on, Judy. You can pull it out. Son of Joseph. Son of Joseph. Yeah. So there were 12 sons of Israel. Joseph was one of those sons. But Joseph went down to Egypt. He had a couple of boys, Manasseh and who else? Ephraim. And those two boys became heads of families for Israel. It's interesting how that all worked out. By the way, when the Israelites went into the promised land, and I know we haven't covered this, this is back in Joshua, but perhaps some of you Bible scholars remember, what happened with the tribe of Manasseh? Half of them stayed where? They stayed on the east side of the Jordan River, and the other half was going to go into the promised land and take their inheritance. And they asked God about that, and God said, okay, yeah, you guys can stay over here, but you have to send a contingent of troops to help conquer the promised land. You can't just stay over here and get out of the fight. You got to stay in the fight. So they said, yeah, we'll do that, and that's what they did. But here's Manasseh, the part that's fighting, coming in to take possession of Beth Shean and its villages, and they couldn't do it. Or Taanach and its villages, or the inhabitants of Dor and its villages, or the inhabitants of Ibleam and its villages, or the inhabitants of Megiddo. Megiddo. When you hear the word Armageddon, that's Megiddo. Armageddo, Valley of Megiddo. So this is the area we're talking about. It's over near the coast. So they couldn't do it. 29. There's Ephraim. Ephraim did not drive out the Canaanites who were in Gezer. A lot of old guys there. That's why they called it Gezer. They knew how to fight. So the Canaanites lived in Gezer among them. I'm going to get something started. These kids are going to go home and say, there's this place called Gezer because there's a bunch of old people living there. Zebulun, verse 30, did not drive out the inhabitants of Kitron or the inhabitants of Nahalol. So the Canaanites lived among them and became subject to forced labor. So that's what they did. They failed to drive them out, but eventually some of these Canaanites, they would put to forced labor. But it wasn't God's plan. And God said, they're going to be thorns in your sides, and that's exactly what happened. So the next part of the worksheet talks about why there was a conquest in the first place. After all, you have people who will say, that God of the Old Testament, he was wicked and evil. He taught his people to slaughter anybody who was different than them left and right, and that's what they did. And that's an accusation that's often made that's just not true. Yes? In the blank. There's a blank? Oh, yes. The reason for this military failure seems to be outlined in 2, 1 through 5 as actually being a spiritual failure. I'm sorry. So military in the first blank, spiritual in the second. And I put seems to be because that's how it looks to me, and especially based on chapter 2, 1 through 5. All right. Any other blanks I missed? All right. So why a conquest in the first place? Why would God say, I've got a place to send my people, and when you get there, wipe everybody out? Wow, that's pretty harsh. Why would he do that? We'll go back to Genesis chapter 15. And remember, we're talking about hundreds of years prior to Judges, the time of the Judges. This is God talking to Abraham and reestablishing his covenant with Abraham. And he has Abraham take some animals and cut them in half. And it's dark and fire comes and goes between those animals. It's a pretty awesome account of what happens here. And then after that, Abraham says he goes to sleep. It says verse 12. This is Genesis 15, 12. When the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abraham, and behold, a terror and a great darkness fell upon him. God said to Abram, "Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that's not theirs, where they will be enslaved and oppressed 400 years. But I will also judge the nation whom they will serve." What nation was that? Of course, that was Egypt. And God brought judgment on Egypt. "And afterward, they will come out with many possessions. As for you, you shall go to your fathers in peace. You will be buried at a good old age. Then, in the fourth generation, they will return where? Here." Abram was standing right there in Canaan land. And God said, I'm gonna bring them here. Remember back in chapter 12, God appeared to Abraham and he said, "Get up and get out of your country. I'm going to lead you to a place where I'm going to give you this place. Give it to your offspring." And so he led him up and brought him. He went up first because that's the only way he could do it because of the desert. They went up, followed the Fertile Crescent, and came back down from the north into the Canaan land. And God said, "This is the place I'm going to give your children." So that's where he is right now when this is happening in Genesis chapter 15. So he says, in the fourth generation, they'll return here. Why? Verse 16, why? The iniquity, what's iniquity? That's sin. That's a tendency towards sin. That's a dirty, filthy, evil mindset. The iniquity of the Amorites is what? It's not yet full. In other words, they've got iniquity. They've got all this bad stuff, but their cup is not full yet. And when it's full, then I'm going to bring your children into this land to conquer them and take this land for themselves. That's what God is telling Abraham here. So, let's fill in some blanks. Genesis 15, 12 to 21, God promised blank Abraham, that his descendants would return to the place where he was, but not until then, because the blank of the Amorites, the iniquity of the Amorites, was not yet full. Now, if you think about that, the Amorites were already doing evil things. And this is hundreds of years before God brings judgment on them. So how patient is God? How long-suffering is God? How willing is he to put up with this kind of evil and foolishness before he finally lowers the boom? It's like you parents when you say, "Don't make me come back there, or come down there, or come up there, or wherever they are, where the kid's iniquity is waxing hot." Say, "Don't make me do that." And God is saying, I'm coming. But it's going to be a while because their iniquity is not yet full. Leviticus chapter 18. This is pretty sordid stuff. I don't really think we should read all of it, but you can look at it. If there's a part of the Bible that's R-rated, this is the chapter right here. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, I'm the Lord your God, and you shall not do what is done in the land of Egypt where you lived, nor are you to do what is done in the land of Canaan where I'm bringing you. You shall not walk in their statutes." What's God saying? You saw what they did in Egypt. You better not do what they did. And when you get to Canaan, you see what they're doing. You better not do what they do. That's what God is saying. And now he's going to outline what they do. Verse 6. "None of you shall approach any blood relative of his to uncover nakedness. I'm the Lord." What's that mean, uncover nakedness? That's talking about intimate relations with someone. That's what that is all about. It's kind of a, if there's a nice way to say it, that's a nice way to say it. Gets the point across. "You're not to uncover the nakedness of your father, that is, the nakedness of your mother." What's he saying? He's saying, don't be messing around with your mother. Oh, my goodness, why would he say such a thing? Guess what they were doing in Canaan? That's what they were doing in Canaan. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your father's wife. It's your father's nakedness. The nakedness of your sister, either your father's daughter or your mother's daughter, whether born in home or born outside, they're naked. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your son's daughter or your daughter's daughter. Their nakedness you shall not uncover. And he just goes, that's what this whole chapter is about. These kinds of practices that the Canaanites were doing, and God says you better not do it. You get down to verse 20. Let's go to verse 22. Just to show you how out of date this book is. You shall not lie with a male as one lies with a female. It is what? It's an abomination. The things he's been talking about so far, those are lewdness, but he hasn't called them abomination. This he calls abomination. Also, verse 23, you shall not have intercourse with any animal to be defiled. Who would do that? Who was doing it? The Canaanites. See, God says to Abraham, I'm bringing your children in here, and I'm going to have them wipe out the people that are going to live there because they're full of iniquity, but their iniquity's not full yet. But when it is full, I'm bringing your kids in, and I'm going to tell them to wipe everybody out. We're just going to clean this place up. I'm giving them hundreds of years to repent, hundreds of years to change. And remember, where did the people who lived in Canaan come from? Think back to Genesis chapter 11. What happened in Genesis chapter 11? That's the Tower of Babel. Where did the people who lived at the Tower of Babel come from? They're all the offspring of Noah. The most righteous man in the world, the only man that God found righteous, saved through the flood. His offspring are building that tower, and God confuses the languages so that everybody goes out in different directions. Somebody went to Canaan land and lived there, and those people should have known about God, but they did what Paul talked about in Romans chapter 1. They put God out of their knowledge, put God out of their thinking, and they began to worship and serve the creature more than the creator. And they became defiled, and that's what he's talking about here. This is what they're practicing. So verse 24 of chapter 18, Leviticus 18, 24. Do not defile yourselves in any of these things, for by all these the nations which I'm casting out before you have become defiled. They've been doing this stuff. I'm getting rid of them. For the land has become defiled. Therefore I have brought its punishment upon it, so that the land has spewed out its inhabitants. If you find an explanation for exactly what that means, I want to hear it because I don't know. But you get the imagery. You ever had anything in your mouth? You put something in there, you drank it or you ate it because you thought, oh, this will be good. And you put it in there. And it was so vile, you couldn't get it out of your mouth fast enough. When that happens, if it's happened to you, do you spit once? No. You spit several times until you get rid of that sense of whatever that was, because it was some kind of filth or something nasty. So that's what God's talking about. The land has done with these people because of their practices being so bad. I know, it's all out of date. Nothing like that happens anymore. But I wonder what's coming for America. Anyway, he says in verse 27, for the men of that land who have been before you have done all these abominations, and the land has become defiled, so that the land will not spew you out should you defile it as it has spewed out the nation which has been before you. Whoever does any of these abominations, those persons who do so shall be cut off from among their people. So that's what this conquest is all about. Let's fill in some blanks. Leviticus 18, 1 through 30, God specifically pointed out the blank practices of the Canaanites. You could put evil, you could put wicked, I would put sexual practices. These are sexual practices. And they're vile. And they're unnatural. He pointed out the sexual practices of the Canaanites so that his people would not do the same. English words used to translate the Hebrew adjectives describing these practices are, what were some of the words, did you notice them in your English translation? There's four that I found that I'll point out here. First one's lewdness. If it's lewd, it's sexually vile or dirty, filthy. Defilement. That's when you take something that's good and clean and wholesome and you make it filthy. Abomination and perversion. What's perversion mean? It just means you push it out of the way it's supposed to be. It's perverted. It's not what it's designed to be. And everything about you that is sexual is designed by God. If you're a young man, a young woman, old man, old woman, your sex is assigned to you by God. You don't decide when you get to be a certain age whether you're going to be a boy or a girl. God makes you that. So that's a holy thing. God gave you that. It's his choice for you to be what you are and who you are. And so that's yours as a blessing from God. It's a blessing to be a man. It's a blessing to be a woman. It's a blessing. And that's the way he designed it, and that's the way it is. All right, Deuteronomy 7, 1 through 6 and verse 16. See, we're getting background here on why they're conquering the land in the first place. Who wants to read Deuteronomy 7, 1 through, what do they have, 1 through 6? Yes. Got a reader? Anybody tired of listening to me and want to read? Okay, Janie.
Then the Lord your God brings you into the land that you are entering to take possession of it, and clears away many nations before you. The Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites and Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, seven nations, one yours and God mightier than yourselves. And when the Lord your God gives them over to you, and you defeat them, then you must devote them to complete destruction. You shall make no covenant with them, and show no mercy to them. You shall not intermarry with them, giving your daughters to your sons, or taking their daughters for your sons, for they would turn away your sons from following me to serve other gods. But the anger of the Lord will be fulfilled, will be filled against you, and he will destroy you quickly. The flesh shall deal with you. You shall break down their altars, and dash in pieces their pillars, and chop down their asherah, and burn your heart images with fire. For you are a people holy to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for his treasured possession.
Thank you, Janie. And we won't applaud, but we do applaud you for all those words you pronounced so well. And then you look at verse 16. Go a little farther on down, chapter 7, verse 16. You shall consume all the peoples whom the Lord your God will deliver to you. Your eye shall not pity them, nor shall you serve their gods, for that would be a snare to you. Back to Abraham. Why was God bringing them into Canaan? Not just to give them the land, but also to do what? To judge these people who are living there for all of their evil practices. God said, they're going to be slaves in Egypt. I'm going to judge Egypt. But they're going into Canaan, and you going in there is going to be my judgment against them. So let's fill in some blanks. God instructed his people to utterly blank the nations, destroy the nations. He would help them clear away. They were not to make any blanks with them, covenants, or allow their children to marry any Canaanites. They were also directed to tear down their blank, their altars, and burn their blank blanks. Carved images with fire All of this was to preclude their children being blank, blank to serve other gods. And from the text, I would put turned away to serve other gods. For these reasons, they were not to allow their blank to blank them. Their blank to blank the Canaanites. Their eye to pity. That's what he says in verse 16. So you're going in there with a sword and you're going to see people and there's going to be women and children. And I'm telling you, wipe them all out. Wipe them all out. Why? What was the fear? They would turn their hearts away. It's interesting how that turn of phrase was in there. Turn, preclude that their children being turned away to serve other gods. Jesus said there are two ways. One is broad and one is narrow. And if you're in the narrow way, see, the narrow way didn't become a thing when Jesus said it. The narrow way had always been. The narrow way is what Noah was in. The narrow way is what Abraham was in. The narrow way is what Israel was in when they were doing right. But God said, you let those people stay with you. You make covenants with them. You intermarry with their family. They're going to turn you away from me. And that's exactly what happened. Over and over and over again. Why Judges? So chapter 2 of Judges, verses 11 to 17. Who wants to do some reading here? Need another reader. Anybody want to read? If you just love listening to me, I'll read it. All right, Judy.
Then the sons of Israel, the people, in the sight of the Lord, and served the Baals. And they forsook the Lord and the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt, and followed other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them, and bowed themselves down to them, and thus they provoked the Lord to anger. So they forsook the Lord and served Baal and the Asherah, and the anger of the Lord burned against Israel, and he gave them into the hands of plunderers who plundered them, and he sold them into the hands of their enemies around them, so that they could no longer stand before their enemies. And wherever they went, the hand of the Lord was against them for evil, as the Lord had spoken and as the Lord had sworn to them, so that they were severely distressed.
One more. Oh, actually, two more.
Okay. Then the Lord raised up the judges who delivered them from the hands of those who plundered them. And yet they did not listen to their judges, for they played the harlot after other gods and bowed themselves down to them. And they turned aside quickly from the way in which their fathers had walked in obeying the commandments of the Lord.
All right, I'm sorry.
They did not do as their fathers.
Right. If you pull up Netflix on your TV and you're going to watch the movie called Judges, there's no movie called Judges, but if there was, this would be the synopsis right here of the movie called Judges, and that's in a nutshell what this is. So they turned away from the Lord. God raised up judges to deliver them, and they didn't listen to the judges. Over and over and over again this goes. So let's fill in some blanks here. Bottom of the page, see Judges 2, 11 to 17. The sons of Israel did blank in the sight of the Lord, evil, and they served Baals. God's blank was kindled against them. Anger. That's an interesting term, isn't it, kindled? What do you think of when you think about kindling something? How do you kindle a fire? You start out with a small flame, sometimes even a spark. That's how the old mountaineers did it. They had a piece of steel and a flint, and they'd have some, maybe find a mouse nest, and they would tear that thing apart and strike a flint and get a spark in it. But before they would do that, they would have some smaller pieces of wood they would call tinder, and you'd pile it up around it. You start with something small, but you keep adding fuel to it, and that's the picture we're getting of God's anger. He doesn't get angry all at once. You cross him, you cheat, you do evil, you get out of his way and harm other people, harm yourself. His anger begins, and if you don't stop, it just keeps getting greater and greater and greater until, well, you're toast. It's not his nature to be angry. It's his nature to be loving and kind and gentle and gracious. He wants to do that so much, he sacrificed his own son to buy you and me out of our sin, and these people as well. All these Israelites in this day who are going to be with us in heaven, they're going to be saved by the same blood you and I are saved by. And for the same reason, their faith in God, just like your faith is in God. Same thing. God's anger was kindled against them because, as the text says twice, they blanked him to serve these other gods. They forsook him. It's not like they said, oh, you'll be God over here and we'll have another God over here. No, they left God. It's not like that would be good, to have God and then another God. That's not good either. But this says they forsook God to serve other gods. So he gave them into the hands of their blank, their enemies. Think about who our enemies are in this world. As an American, who are your enemies? Do you want to be in the hands of your enemies? That's what happened to the Israelites. Who blanked them. What's it mean to plunder? You take everything. So you got a house, you got stuff, you got a room, you got your stuff in your room. Somebody that hates your guts, I'm sorry, that's the terminology. That's what's going on. They come into your house, they come into your room, they grab your stuff, and they take off with it. Nothing you can do about it. That's what God's saying, I'm going to do this to you because you've forsaken me. And the Lord's hand was against them. How do you get anything right when God's hand is against you? You don't. Yet chapter 2, verse 17 says they did not blank to their judges. They didn't listen to the judges and played the blank. The harlot, as they blanked down to other gods, bowed down. That's a deliberate act. They were not forced. They volunteered to bow down to gods that were not the true and living God. And God says, you're playing the harlot when you do that. You're like a prostitute. You're selling yourself for evil. Turning aside blank. How did they turn aside according to the text? Quickly. Quickly. They didn't say, you know, I don't think we should do this. And over several months or years. No. Quickly. Hey, that looks like fun. Let's go do that. Quickly, from the way in which their blank had walked. Their fathers. But what happened to their fathers? What happened to that generation? They died. And this generation came up. They don't know God. Who do we call the greatest generation? Or who has been called the greatest generation? All those folks who grew up during the Great Depression, they were deprived. Not depraved, they were deprived. They didn't have a lot of stuff. And so they had a different set of values because their values were not based in things, in material possessions. And then bad things began to happen in the world. Hitler went into Czechoslovakia. Hitler went into Poland. And we're looking over towards Europe and saying, what's going on over there? Well, that's their war. And then Pearl Harbor happened. Oh, it's our war now. What are we going to do? It was a hard time. Hard times do what? They make strong people. Strong people make peace. And with peace comes easier times. And what do easier times do? It can make weak people if you're not careful. And these guys, they were not the generation that conquered. They were different. And every generation is different. But the thread throughout every single generation, biblically speaking, is faith. There were always faithful people. There was always a remnant. You'll see that in the prophets, talking about the remnant. You remember when Elijah went up on Mount Carmel and had that contest with the 850? I know some of you got to read the fine print. There were 850 false prophets. And those false prophets cried out to their God for fire to come down. And what happened? Nothing. Elijah built an altar like God said. They put the sacrifice up there on top of the wood. And then what did he do? Built a trench around it and poured water on it until the trench was full of water. And then he said, Lord, here we are. And boom, fire came down from heaven, consumed everything, even the stones that made up the altar. So they took those 850 prophets and killed them down at the Brook of Kidron. If you ever get to go over there, go up on Mount Carmel. It's pretty cool. Well, then what did Elijah do? He went out, sat down under a juniper tree and said, Lord, just let me die. And the Lord sent him something to eat, had him take a nap. And then he said, listen, brother, I got 5,000 in Israel who haven't yet bowed the knee to Baal. Does that sound like a lot to you? Psst. How many Israelites came out of Egypt? 605,000 fighting men, 20 years old and upwards. And God is telling Elijah, hey, don't quit. I got 5,000 that are still faithful. 5,000? How many did he need during the flood? Just Noah and his wife and kids? Anyway, has there been two Baals? Well, anyway. Okay, yeah. You guys got to hold your finger on there for me. Oh, anyway, anybody got anything as we close? Oh.
The Levi tribe had no land, right?
That's right. Yeah, they had inheritance that was different. Another hand? Nothing? Okay. Thank you all. Appreciate it. Lord bless you for being so patient. Class dismissed. You can get up now.